Welcome everybody to episode 14 of Electronic Talks. I am your host, Johannes, and today we have a very special guest. He's been releasing music for years on labels such as Digital Structures, among others. And he's a local producer and DJ from Stockholm named Diamandi. Welcome.
Hey, thanks. Hey. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing, man?
Good. Surprisingly good, man. Thanks.
Excellent.
How are you doing?
I'm very good. The spring is coming. I'm getting the good like sun vibes these days. Mm. So it really affects the mood, I think.
You affected by the darkness?
Yeah, kind of. I would say so, okay. For sure. Mm. But from what it seems like, you've had a pretty good year and you've been very productive and have a lot of stuff going on. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been a good year studio-wise, for sure. Because you don't have so much gigs going on. Mm. So you invest your energy into the studio, which has worked pretty good for me.
Yes. Mm. What is your kind of routine when it comes to producing in the studio, would you say?
First of all, jamming around. You finding some kick and bass just to be there as a bass structure of the whole track, and then you jam on it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure about the kick and bass from the beginning because a lot of producers create a master loop first, and then they develop from it. I was doing it like this, but now I start to create a master loop, which is a temporary master loop, and just jam ideas on it. And when I hear, okay, this something is going on here, something interesting going on, then I start to structure my master loop. And then from there, it develops. And of course, it's important to which label you do in the track.
Yeah, you've been working with a lot of different labels over the years.
Exactly. So I got experience, like, for example, if... it depends. If you're doing a track because you're just doing a track, so you take it wherever you want. But if you're doing a track because it's a remix to someone or some specific label ask you for an EP, you agree to that. So you have kind of, I call it stylization, you know? You have to style it a bit to the direction of the same label. Yeah. I don't mean you have to copy what they do. But, you know, to be in the same river with them, same flow. So it also depends. It also influencing the way you do things.
Yes.
Yeah.
I get that. Mm. And if we turn back the tape to the beginning, kind of, I know you were born in Russia. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you were raised in Israel.
Yeah.
And how was your upbringing musically? And like, how did it bring you to electronic music, would you say?
Okay, good question. Because for Russian boy, it's kind of almost same routine, or girl, yeah?
Yeah.
For Russian kid, it's the same routine. It's kind of when you age six, they send you to the music school to play piano.
Okay.
And I played piano for 4 or 5 years before we left.
Yeah.
So when we left, my parents bought me a tape player with Scooter tape on it.
Ah, I see.
And Scooter and Prodigy was crazy popular then. I was 10 years old, you know, so I'm like, wow. And on the way to Israel, I was listening to it, you know, because it's weird and sad for a kid to leave the country.
Of course.
That you grew up in, born in. So through the music, I didn't feel sad, really. I was just like interested with all the songs and all that.
Yeah.
And when I arrived to Israel, I was already like a Scooter fan because of this tape.
Yeah. You know?
And then Prodigy and all that. Then I went to school in Israel and they had the Psytrance scene just, it was 1998, 1999. The Psytrance scene was exploding.
Oh, really?
I mean, like, it was everywhere. It was so commercial. It was it was unbelievable. Mm. It was everywhere. So, you know, then it was a time when you would burn CDs and exchange with your friends.
Yes.
So I got this CD with the names like Etnica, GMS, Skazi, the old stuff, Infected, of course, and all the good stuff. And I was blown away. And that's it. It was kind of from there. I was like, okay, I really like this music. That's all I'm going to listen to. And I listened to any genre in psytrance that was available by then. Prodigy Scooter, Chemical Brothers, and all that in more commercial stuff. And then in the age 16, 17, you start to experiment with first softwares like Fruity Loops. EJ, you know what it is.
Of course, back in the late 90s.
Yeah, they give you all the samples and you just need to build them and all that. And then I got Cubase and start experimenting. Me and my friend, we had a project of dark psytrance.
Okay.
Yeah. 170, 160 BPM, like crazy stuff.
All right, really hard stuff.
Yeah, but you know, as a kid, you experiment.
Yes.
And then in the age of 2021, I heard the Xenon Records, which is also Psy, but 135, 130 BPM, stuff like this. And I was like, whoa, what is that? Music is much more interesting when it's slow.
Yeah.
And then I heard Umek and all that. And then I'm like, okay, I want to do that.
That was your direction.
Yeah. And I stayed there since then.
And would you say like getting into that kind of music when you were living in Israel, was there like a scene where you could go and experience the music? And how was that back in those days?
The thing is, you know, I think Israel have a huge plus weather-wise. It's always, it's always warm.
Almost. Yeah.
Even in the winter, it's like 15, 20 degrees and people are freezing.
Right.
For Sweden, it's a summer, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So there is so many open airs.
Okay.
And festivals. It's ridiculous. In one weekend, it can be 8, 9.
Okay.
Open airs. And it's a lot for such a small country.
Definitely.
Yeah. Mm. So even as a 15, 16-year-old kid, I think my first rave when I was 15, 16, it was like this Coca-Cola promoted festival for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard Raja Ram and Infected Mushroom Life first time there.
That's not bad for that kind of event, right?
Yeah, first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it was a night that I remember, let's say like that. And so already from there you enter to the scene, you know, like you meet people that like the same stuff. And clubbing in Tel Aviv especially and the north of Israel is insane.
Okay, you were based in Tel Aviv most of
the
time?
I was based, I lived a bit more south when I was living with my parents, but when I became independent, I was living in Tel Aviv and the area in Tel Aviv. Yeah. So clubbing is I was a resident in this production called Klika.
Okay.
And we had 1,000 people. 1,200 people every Monday.
Oh my God. Mondays.
Every Monday.
Yeah.
Every Monday, international or two international acts, residents or local heroes, two dance floors, and a line of like, you know, 500, 600 meters outside the club.
But that's crazy having like 1,000 plus on a Monday. Yeah. Then, then I would assume the scene in general was quite strong then.
Very strong, and it's not only one, it's not the only club that had this kind of audience. You had on Monday a few more places that were open, you know. So it's every day, you know, and then Tuesday you have this club, Cat and Dog, that got closed now, but Marco Bailey there, Carl Cox there, this one there, so there is so much choice.
Great.
Yeah.
So I would assume that you were a resident at that time? Or
I was working with them, then I became a resident, and that's what basically, that's how I put my leg into this world.
And how did you go from there to your first release or your first label from this DJing and so on?
As you know, I was in the army.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a must.
Yes, of course.
So I got... with me was serving a guy, maybe some minimal retro guys remember Flippers. It was a project that was pretty successful back in the days. And it was my friend.
Yeah.
And then he threw a party in the north. He was living in the north in Haifa, and he told me, come and play.
So you did 2 years in the army? Or
3 years.
Yeah. And he was there as well during that time. Could you go on vacation and host things? Or was it like proper 3 years and then afterwards you could do things?
No, we would come home every 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
Mm. And so when you come home in the weekend as a soldier, all you do is party.
Yeah.
And see your friends.
Yes. Mm.
So he told me one of these weekends, come, I'm throwing a party in the north. And come and play. And I DJed once or twice before. And dark Psytron stuff. And never played techno. So I came. It was a great gig. And then we slept at his place. And we worked in the studio. And we did the track in 6 hours the day after.
Okay.
And we called it 6 hours.
Perfect. I like the concept. Yeah.
And he released it. So he basically showed me, because I was trying to produce and doing, you know, things and Fruity Loops, as I said. And
all that.
But then I saw how he operate and how you basically build a track.
Yeah.
And you will not believe, but some techniques I use till today. Like this evening influenced me so much.
Wow.
Because this guy is a really gifted producer, like high level.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's, I think he's like certified Cubase teacher or something.
Yes.
So
this was like a very important point in your development.
Super important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then when I saw what he's doing, I tried to recreate at home and start to experiment. And but this 6 hours track got released in Low Kick Records, which is Brazilian based record. Label and it was a good track. It was for its time.
Yes.
So that's my first release. Yeah.
Mm. And have you always gone under your name Diamandi, or have you sometimes tried other?
You're asking here.
Yeah.
You're opening holes, man.
Yeah. You don't have to say if you don't want to.
I had a stupid name before.
Okay.
Called DJ Paralyze.
Okay.
Because
that's funny though.
Yeah. Because the project that we had with my friend that did Psytrance, Dark Psytrance, called Paralyze System.
Ah, I see. Okay. Mm.
So, and that, but it holded on for a few months. And then
I'm like, you left that.
I have such a nice family name. Why not to use it, you know? And also, techno scene, I guess it's a bit more official. It's not weird to be called by your personal name in the techno scene.
No.
So I'm like, Diamandi sounds okay.
So you did this 6 hour track while you were in the army.
Yeah.
And you continued producing throughout that time as well? Or was it more like a break?
I continued when I got home, but it's not a lot. But when I finished the army, then of course I hit the studio a lot. So, It's almost impossible to produce when you're in the army, of course.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So when you finished, you continued living in Tel Aviv. Is that correct?
Finished what?
The army. You continued being in Tel Aviv?
I lived a year with my parents in the south to collect some money. Because how it works, because they destroy your personality in the army.
Yeah.
And totally erase who you are.
Yeah.
And if they don't erase, they stop the development.
Yeah.
Okay, because
it's very strict.
It's strict. And, you know, like, think about it. You're in school before the army. So somebody controlling your life and, you know, guiding you through. You have kind of a frame where you are. And then you're in the army. And the frames there are even harder.
Yeah.
Or tighter. So then, in the age of 21 or 22, it's the first time that you actually without frame.
Yeah.
And you can do what you want until you go study, if you go study. And so a lot of Israelis, they make money working any shitty job that you can imagine. And then they take this money and travel. Usually it goes or India.
Yeah.
Or Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, and Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Or South America.
Yeah.
A bit of US also. So I did the Asian version with my friends. So I saved money, traveled.
Yes.
And then when I lost myself in all these countries and came back, then you kind of start over and start to build your life for real.
Right. Yeah. So you would say that these journeys were kind of you trying to get out of the framework and reset. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find yourself also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before Thailand was Azora.
Okay.
I went to Azora.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was like, whoa.
And how was that? Why was that special for you?
It was Azora 2009 and still was not as huge as Azora today.
Mm.
Like I think today they have around 40,000-50,000 people.
Yeah.
Back then it was 16.
Okay. Yeah, very different.
Yeah. Mm. And yeah, like you, first time in my life that I felt what really freedom is.
Yeah.
Unfiltered.
Yeah.
To both way, to both good and bad.
Yes. Mm.
And of course it influenced you because all you knew before that was frames.
Yes.
So yeah, this trip was amazing. The festival was amazing. We met amazing people that we in touch until today, like 12 years past.
Okay.
We're still in touch.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm. So it's amazing.
Mm. So you go through the strict stuff, then you get a reset and like you have an open slate. What do you do with that?
That's up to you. What do you do with that? You, in my case, I moved to Tel Aviv and became independent with my girl and built a little studio, start to experiment, produce, push my name out there.
Yeah.
Work, study.
Yeah.
Usual stuff. I guess, you know, starting your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sucky thing that you started in the age of 23.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. And from this, what if we would call it early period, do you have some favorite of your output that was also like an important moment for you in your development as an artist?
In the early days?
Yeah.
Mm. I think I can connect this question to Juli. Juli Verstad, Perfect Stranger.
Yeah.
So I think when I was 23, 23, 24, I created this track called I'm a Spider. By today's standards, it's not anything special, but back in the days, it was pretty cool sound.
Yeah.
And Juli picked it up and played it in some radio show. Now I have to people that don't know who Juli is, he's a huge psytrance artist.
Mm.
He goes by name Perfect Stranger.
Yes.
But his other project, Juli Verstad, is basically minimal techno and everything that is weird.
Yeah.
Let's say like this, a fusion between psytech and melodic tech, if I can say, or minimal tech.
Yeah.
And he bought the label that was a Swedish label in its origin, Digital Structures.
Yes.
He bought it. I think the Digital Structures was ran by Tycon, but I might be mistaken, but for sure they released there.
Yeah.
Tycon, the Swedish guys. And so fast forward, he picked up the track. And I was like, whoa, Juli picking up the track because I was a huge fan.
Yeah.
And then I wrote to him, thank you for playing it.
Yeah.
And he wrote to me, you Israeli? Yeah. Whoa, you local? Who are you? Like,
Is he Israeli?
Yeah.
As well.
He's Russian Israeli also.
Oh, okay.
Mm. He's like, what the hell, man?
Mm.
Like, send me more stuff.
Mm.
And then we started to be in touch. I sent him more stuff. And then he called me.
Yeah.
And had this 2 hours rant.
Yeah.
Why my sound is shit, but why it can be good.
Wow. That must have been an interesting phone call.
And it was a lot of them afterwards. And it's very influential part of my life because not a lot of artists have this mentor that can basically show them, not show them, but maybe to take the best out of them.
Yes.
And show them the way how to develop.
Mm.
And that's what happened with Juli. And I consider myself so lucky because I have a few friends that are telling me, I wish that somebody would listen to my tracks and give me such a hard or harsh critic to become better.
Yeah.
You know, So that was very important part of my life. He doesn't know how he got the track, Design mm-hmm. a Spider. He have no idea. I never sent it to him. The label promo that this track was released was not a good promo. So we don't know how he got the track.
Some kind of serendipity.
Yeah.
It was meant to happen, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, it happened. And good that it happened.
Excellent. No, I think I agree with you. Like, there's a lot of like budding or up and coming artists or creatives. That's like a big lack, finding that mentor that works for you or that maybe gives you some hard lessons.
Yeah.
And if you can get that in the beginning, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until today, he tells me my sound is shit. Yeah.
He's a continuing mentor.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's a perfectionist.
Mm.
But in the same time, he's also, you know, Russian Jew, and
right.
we can be harsh.
You have some kind of a special dialogue going on.
Yeah. Like, I don't get hurt by him anymore.
Yeah. But it's what you would call maybe tough love, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. But it's good.
Mm.
Because, and let me not confuse anyone. He doesn't do it only with me. He does it with almost every artist in his label. He's trying to produce him and make him better.
Yeah.
But I'm talking only about myself, and I know him. It's happening for over 8 years already.
Yeah.
So we have a long relationship.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
And was it, so that over 8 years, and when was the point like of your departure when you came to Sweden? Where does that play into the whole story, would you say? Were you very active in Israel before that as well, or?
I was active in Israel, but the problem is that in Israel, it was mainly local gigs.
Yeah.
And I think I flew a few times just abroad. Yeah. It was pretty hard. But when we came to Sweden, it got much better because I guess you're closer to places in Europe.
Yes.
You know, and international gigs start to come in much more frequent. So it also influencing your development.
Yeah.
About Sweden itself, the music that people listen to here is so different from what... and the crowd also, the whole vibe in the party is so different from what is going on in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you learned how to work with the crowd.
Mm.
Okay, because in Israel, I know exactly what track gonna blow them away.
Yeah,
here I play this track and people are like, it's too much.
Ah, I see. You
know, or it's too little, or you're going too melodic, or it's not melancholic enough, or blah blah blah. So. I think that gave me a lot of experience to work with a warmer crowd in Israel and a bit more conserved crowd in Sweden.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm choosing my words very carefully.
Yeah.
But when you learn the differences and when you overcome it, then for me, crowd in Sweden is now one of my favorite crowds.
Yes, you just had to kind of have a period to adapt and learn
exactly
what works here.
Yeah, it's actually very strange how some tracks don't work in one part of the world.
Yeah,
but totally work in another part of the world.
Definitely, I guess it's about the the sound that is I guess popular in the scene or has been played over the years that it connects in different ways.
Yeah,
it must be. And also, how would you say, so you came here, you kind of adapted to the Swedish scene, but then also you started traveling more. Like, how did that affect you as a DJ and producer?
It affects you a lot, of course, because you see more crowds.
Yes.
Okay. Mm. Like, I noticed something also about, for example, Norway,
which I
travel a lot, luckily. Mm-hmm. Traveled.
Mm. Yeah.
Pre-COVID. The scene in Norway is smaller, much smaller than in Sweden. And because of that, they are so they have such a high level of acceptance.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Okay. And they really appreciate when you come from abroad and play some music that they didn't hear before.
Yeah.
So maybe the warmest crowd in Scandinavia.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and
that's great.
I got really surprised because how is it possible? They yeah. literally, our neighbors, it's 55 minutes with the plane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's going on? But I guess because the techno scene is pretty big in Stockholm or in Sweden.
People are more picky.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
Like many times I got people coming to me in the middle of DJ set and saying, it's not techno.
Mm. Or just like that.
Yeah. Where is my 133 Kalabasa BPM, you know, banging like it's not techno. But in Norway, nobody comes to you and say that. They just accept what you play and okay, good. You know.
That's super interesting. I didn't really have that perspective. So super, super interesting.
Yeah.
And also on the note of traveling, do you have some like favorite clubs where you played? Or some favorite experiences?
Maybe the highlight of my career was the gig in Oslo. They had the Boris Brejcha.
Okay. Yeah.
That came first time mm-hmm. to Norway.
Mm.
So they rented this place, 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Park Teatret.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really good production, really professional. Mm. And I got booked, and I never been in Oslo before.
Okay.
So I came first time, and I did good.
Yeah. What was special about that night for you?
Everything came together perfect. Mm. And I came as a no one, and in the end of my set, people chanting my name.
Yeah, okay.
So that I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So it's a highlight. It's one of the best gigs I had.
Mm.
You know, and Boris coming with his manager back in the days, Ann Klu.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Good, man. Good job, you know. So it was nice. Where do I like? Guatemala, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
I have really good friends there. And they booked me two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have a blast there.
How is the scene in Guatemala? It's just interesting small, to hear. Yeah.
But because Guatemala is such a poor country, people that can afford to party, they're not that poor, unfortunately.
Mm.
So they party hard.
Mm.
They have the money for it.
Yeah.
So it's crazy parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's really crazy parties. Mm. And they also, because the scene is so small, so they're more accepting.
Yes.
Yeah.
To different sounds and different influences.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though they like hard.
Mm.
But still, they don't care if you don't play hard.
Yeah. Mm. Very, very interesting. Also, just for fun, you brought one of your favorite tools here when you're producing. this is a shaker?
It's a shaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does this shaker mean to you? What do you use it for?
I use it for shakers.
Yeah, yeah.
Rhythm sections, but actually I really like the sound of it.
Mm.
And you know, I saw you guys bringing here modular synths and stuff.
Yes.
I would not bring my Moog.
No, but I see here when I look at it, it has some different, like, is it Brazilian? It says Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah. My sister was in Brazil and she bought it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave it to me and I use it. I record it like this with actually almost the same mic home. And, you know, the more organic you can make your track, the better, even if it's a shaker.
Yeah. That's an interesting question because I think blending the organic with the electronic often adds that thing that makes it feel alive, you know?
Exactly. Mm. You know, we like to hear a bit of not syncopa but unsynced things.
Yes.
We because when it's too robotic, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I think it doesn't have this dimension of like we always want the human to play the music, right?
Yeah.
What the haters of electronic music say, it's just buttons and robots and it's not have no soul.
Yeah.
So I guess when there is a bit of irregularities or unsynced movement in the track, then people are like, it's like Diamandi is standing there really playing the shaker.
Yes,
you know?
Which you are.
Which I am, but of course I loop it in some point.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It does feel that, you know. Mm. And for example, I have a technique that I late my claps a bit.
Yes.
I delay them a bit, like by 0.03 milliseconds.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives it a bit of late, a bit of like,
yeah.
It's human, you know?
Yeah. It's the human touch.
Yeah.
And you are going to release quite a lot of music in the upcoming year. Yeah. But I had the opportunity to listen to one upcoming track that I really liked, called End of the Tunnel. Mm-hmm. And that one has a little bit lower, I guess, you in your opinion, it's a one of your slower tracks. Would that be correct? Or
maybe more atmospheric.
More atmospheric would be correct, yeah. And could you tell me a little bit more about that? Like the title of the track and your thoughts about it.
Yeah. So thank you for compliment, first of all. Really appreciate it. The track going to be part of my upcoming EP called Hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be three originals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two remixes. One remix for sure.
Yeah.
Very strong remix. Fortunately, cannot say now.
Mm-hmm.
The contracts and all that,
yes.
But four or five tracks EP, and End of the Tunnel is kind of a B-side to the main track.
Mm.
So it's a bit more calm and, you know, experimenting with atmospheres. Mm. So I'm very excited for that EP because it's, you know, when you create music for so long, you sometimes like, okay, this release got out nice. Release got out nice. But this release, I'm actually excited for.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I actually want to hear how people are going to react because I played most of it in the summer when we had a bit of parties going on here and there in the nature. So that was, and the reactions were good and I was really happy with it.
Mm.
So I'm really excited to see what people gonna say,
they're
gonna like it, not like it, and it's exciting to put it out there.
Yeah, and you showed me a sneak peek of the remixes too, and those sounded amazing. So really, really looking forward to it.
Thanks, man.
Are you hopeful guy? Like this EP is about hope. It's about the light. It's about these things.
Yeah, of course. It's of course, you know, like I did even one cynical Facebook post back in the day that everybody gonna start to call the EPs isolation, COVID, or, you know, like quarantine, you know. And it's happening. People calling the music like this because the situation influenced them.
It's even like in the film world, there's even a lot of films coming out now with that theme or those kind of names.
Exactly.
So that's the cultural current, I guess.
Mm. Exactly. So, and I was like, I'm never going to be in that current. But in the end, they do an EP called Hope. And of course, it's connected to the situation.
Mm.
But because my parents, for example, my family, my friends, are in Israel and I didn't see them for 1 year and something.
Yeah.
I have a little kid growing up that, they don't see as well.
Mm.
And it's hard for everyone.
Yeah.
And sometimes you feel that this situation, this darkness gonna last forever.
Yeah.
And there is no hope.
Yeah.
But when I enter the studio and making music, it makes me look on things differently. So I'm like, okay, I was gonna call EP Hope because that's all we have basically. Hope for better days. And for sure, better day is going to come.
Yeah.
But hope comes with it also.
Definitely. Mm. Definitely. I think that's one of the big issues, especially if you have a family abroad, to kind of keep that connection and keep that hope going in many ways.
Yeah. Every Skype call or, you know, video call, it's like you're trying to cheer each other up. Don't worry, soon it will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So hope, you're circulating around hope all the time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And is there anything you could tell us also a little bit about your other releases and what's coming up in the coming year?
Yeah, for sure. So another release going to be on Dreaming Awake label.
Mm-hmm.
And Dreaming Awake is ran by Trevor,
mm-hmm.
Desert Dwellers, if you know them.
Yeah.
they do this organic house, mm-hmm. whatever the Beatport gave the name. But this organic house, and I think they last album Brief took like some really high place in Billboard chart.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so they like, they on top of the game. It's a like the 20, 30 years in the scene, guys from States. So he opened the label and I released already a track there, an EP there, and it did really well in the charts last year.
Okay, great. Congrats on that.
Yeah, thanks. And
what was the name of that EP?
Elegant Sadness.
Great. And so we'll make sure to link that as well for the people listening.
Thank you, thank you. And it was with Stan Kolev remix in it.
Yes.
Which is a progressive kind of star. And so, of course, I'm like, okay, I have to release with you guys again. Because my release was second release there.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I'm with them from the beginning. And so I, next EP gonna be called Ness. And Ness in Hebrew is a miracle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's gonna have three remixes. One from Hannes Weihager, my Swedish good friend and king of progressive house in Sweden. 100%. There is no one better than him, or no one more productive than him, for sure. And one remix from Australia. Man, I'm talking to everyone about Australia.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
They have artists on such a high level.
Yeah.
Developing there. There is few names like Doppel, Funk Form, a lot of them. Okay. Sleep, which is going to have a remix in my EP. Those guys have something in their sound that nobody have in the world.
Wow. And I have to check that out for sure.
Man, I'm going to give you a link to latest Doppel album. There is no way I'm going to pronounce the name because it's long and complicated. But it's insane. Okay? I really recommend to everyone to follow Australian labels like Open Records, Basic Records, Recovery Collective, who discovered this year one of the biggest stars of this year, Fabrication.
Okay.
Okay, so Australia is on fire. So
I've heard great stories about playing live in Australia and touring in Australia and the scene there. It's I've heard really, really good things.
Yeah, man. Like I didn't, and the thing is that we had plans for 2020. Okay, with some people and COVID.
Yes.
So I think I'm gonna get there, but I know that people write to me. And for example, I released one podcast set, I mean, online, and they're like, on the 43rd minute, this track sounds like your bass line. And I'm like, whoa, that's deep. That's going too deep.
Yeah.
You know, they really listen to their music. And I'm like, wow.
That's great.
That's amazing. So Dreaming Awake Records and another label that I'm working with is... we did a collab with this guy from Hungary called Sandokan, a really cool guy. And our collab going to be released on Undergroove Music from Mexico.
Okay, great. A Mexican label.
Yeah, really good label. They do huge events in Tulum and all that.
Okay, great. How did you get in touch with this Mexican label?
This Mexican label we know for, I know I released with them before.
Okay.
So we have good relationship and we did this collab and I'm like, and you know, when you do this collab, we had no idea who we're doing for.
Okay.
So when we finished the track, I'm like, Undergroove.
How did you work together on the on this collab? Was it like remote or I guess? Yeah.
Yeah, sending files to each other.
And how is that work process, would you say, compared to your normal
track writing? It depends who you work with.
Yeah.
It depends who you work with. Of course, of course, it's much more comfortable to write yourself.
Yeah.
What I like about collabs, when they flow, it's a huge time-saving process.
Right. You make decisions faster? Is that it?
You make decision faster, and also you don't have to make all of them.
Yes.
Okay, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, I don't want to deal with the snare. Your snare is shit, you know this meme?
Yeah.
So, hey, Sharon, can you deal with this? Yeah, I'll fix
and you it. Let the other guy check it out with a fresh eyes.
So you don't have to deal with everything, But the annoying part that is the sending files and all that. And oh, mm-hmm. this file doesn't work. Oh, send me this, the media. Oh, but what VST do you use?
Yeah.
So logistics is a bit annoying. Mm. But with Sharon, with Sandokan especially, the process always works well. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's my second or third collab with him.
Yeah.
I did some collabs that it just doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bad. It makes you not fight, but it makes a little conflict between you both. And yeah. then you don't want to work with each other anymore. And it's weird. It's a weird vibe.
Yeah.
But with Sharon, is
that's so great.
Yeah.
That's I guess that's the configuration you want with a good collaborator, that you have this kind of flow yeah. somehow.
Mm.
Mm. And apart from these releases, like what's your idea for yourself coming up in the future now? Are you looking forward to going back to playing live like in the end of the year, or what's your thoughts on that?
You know, I gigless for 4 or 5 months,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah.
And I start to miss it.
Yeah.
Like first 2-3 months, you're like, okay.
Mm.
Studio, family, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But now I start to miss it a lot. Of course, I want to go and play live again, travel again, show my music to the world.
Yeah.
But in the same time, I think once I was more chaseful.
Yeah.
You know, book me, do this, please. Today, it's a bit more like, whatever.
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow, because I'm going to sit in the studio, doesn't matter what.
Right.
Okay, like if there is not going to be even one gig all my life, I'm still going to enter a studio.
That's cool. So you found some kind of studio zen that you can be okay with because in this time. Yeah,
it's like, you know, you as a content creator and creator yourself, don't you feel this emptiness when you, for example, 2-3 months you took time off, or you don't have a muse, or other shit happening in your life?
For sure.
And then you're like, if I don't create something now, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, for sure.
Happens to
for
you?
Sure, for sure.
So same, like, I sometimes I take these pauses and then I'm like, if I don't enter studio today, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah, something, it has to happen.
Yeah, something itching, you know. So I'm there, like, I'm more like, I think I'm more calm.
Yeah. That's a good byproduct, though. That's really the right way of looking at things, I think, at the moment.
It took many years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this profession this thing called the artist is maybe the most hard mental thing you can go through, in my opinion, if you really want to get somewhere.
Yeah.
Because the amount of no that you get, rejects, or criticism, or self-criticism, not everybody can deal with it.
It
was hard for me. But again, now I feel that I'm in the stage of, okay, what will happen, and I'm happy with it.
I'm super happy to hear that. And I'm really, really looking forward to all the upcoming releases and also seeing you live when the possibility comes. So I think that's about the time for us today. So thank you so much for coming, man.
Thank you, Hannes. It was comfortable and nice.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was it for episode 14 of Electronic Talks podcast. As usual, we're available here on YouTube, but also all the other audio platforms. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week again. Thank you.